Okay, now recording. So folks, this is the second session in which we want to discuss spirituality and physics and various things that we think Swedenborg ought to have say something about, but he didn't spell out as much detail. So today's going to be the big picture, but before that I want to discuss revise what we talked about on Monday for those of you that were here, and even more importantly for those of you not here. I want to remind you that we should remember from Swedenborg that everything in the spiritual world and mental world proceeds by having a desire, and the desire thinks about possibilities, so it thinks about, it persists for a while, it procrastinates, and that the desire ends up in a form of thinking of all these possibilities, and then after some while later it produces an action. And this is the basic scheme of things happening that Swedenborg tells us happens in the spiritual and mental world. And the important thing is that after the initial desire there's a gap, there's a later, I wrote here, there's a procrastination, there's a delay before you actually decide what to do, before you actually act. And if you can think about it in your life, if you acted as soon as you had the desire without thinking, then life wouldn't be so enjoyable. There's always a delay in which God gives us the ability to think about what we do before we do it. So it's what we act is informed by thought and desire, by thought and planning. And so most of the time we're not acting, we're just thinking of acting. There are individual actions, and so that means what persists in us is the desire in the form of thought. So Swedenborg reminds us that love is the substance, or the desire in this case, and thought is the form that the desire takes while it's thinking of acting, and then it produces an effect. So this is the basic scheme that Swedenborg has for the spiritual world. And then on Monday I tried to explain how we could look at the physical world in the correspondence. See, these three things here form a pattern, and in the physical world there's the same pattern but made out of a different substance. And the idea of having a physical world following this pattern means that the world is slightly different from the way it looks visually, because visually the world always seems to be existing, there always seems to be doing something. Atoms exist continuously through time, but that's the classical way, the Newtonian way of thinking about the world. But 100 years ago physicists discovered that the world doesn't behave like that at the smallest level. There are gaps, these effects occur intermittently. They occur after an interval. They occur in steps, or called quanta. Or a quantum is a way of counting. A quantum is a step, or a unit of counting. And so the fact that we have propensity, which is like, corresponds to desire, we have propensity in the forms of exploring possibilities, which is like a wave spreading out, looking, exploring all the options, and then there's an effect, an actual selection of a particular outcome. That's in correspondence to the spiritual decisions. And therefore the persisting substance, most of the time you have the propensity in this form, and so a physical substance is propensity in a spatial form. And so we have an idea of substance, and this is a bit, and it's taken physicists quite a while. Some physicists have explored this possibility, but they haven't really seen the general principle involved. Because some physicists want to say that there is only effects, you know, and so, or only sort of action, only motion. But you can't have motion without a form, and you can't have form without something existing in that form. So an extremely oversimplified view is just to have actions. The next most simplified view is just to have these two sections, and this is what Descartes did. Rene Descartes in 1600s had a view in which human souls were thinking things, res cogito, and in existing things were extended things. And that's just taking these two together without having any substance, because here we have thought. So Descartes said that souls were just thinking things that acted. That's just these two. And he said that physical objects were just extended things that bumped into each other. And so he had his simplified view of the world, which was very popular for a long time, but although people resisted, just has these two. But from Swedenborg, Swedenborg actually follows Aristotle's principle. Aristotle's principle is that things that exist are substances in a form. And so and substances in a form that act. Aristotle was clear that you have to have a substance, something that persisted, while it's persisting, it had to be in a form, and then it could act by means of its causal powers. And so that Aristotle was 2,500 years ago, didn't have a spiritual view of things, but at least he could see that physical things consisted of these three things, three aspects together. So that any view of reality had to have these three things. And Swedenborg, I think we can say, emphasizes the importance of desire, thought, and action, or love, wisdom, and use. This is the three things. And so that Swedenborg reminds us that a religious life has to consist of all three. You have to have a use, you actually have to do something, and you have to think about it before you do it. It has to act from thought, which evaluates what's good. And furthermore, you have to do it from love. So that Swedenborg says that for any object to be a whole object, any religious person to be a whole spiritual being, you have to have all three of these things. And Swedenborg also talks about correspondences. There's a correspondence between, say, these spiritual things and these three physical things, physical aspects. But Swedenborg didn't really expand what he talked about in the physical world. Okay, so this is just a summary of what I did on Monday, which I'm going to use as a basis. So perhaps we can are there any questions? Some people weren't here on Monday. I've been talking for too long and now people don't talk. I should have started by asking you questions.
I was here on Monday, but I'm still kind
of... Okay. So I'm going to move this back a bit, or move it off to one side. And so... Yes.
For me, when you talk about persisting substance, even though there are these gaps in between these phases, to our perception, that is what Swedenborg really talks about, a continuous creation, a continuous sustenance.
Yes, the whole point of something existing continuously is that it persists. But what persists is not the actual manifestation, but the prior steps before the manifestation. The actual manifestation exists and steps.
It's like a movie. Yes. Frames.
Frame, Swedenborg in his early life talked in his Principia. He talked about a conatus, which produces motion of points. That's what Swedenborg had in 1734, and to have a motion, you have these things, and he had some very simple propensity. He wasn't clear in his own mind what it was. He knew that there had to be a propensity, because if you didn't have a propensity, you're just doing mathematics. But he wanted to follow the style of the mathematicians, but make something physics out of it. And physics requires something like propensity or cause or power or potentiality, something which actually does something. That's what makes physics different from mathematics. So if you just have mathematics, you just have numbers 1, 2, 3, but what are they? You going to ask a question?
Yeah, I was just going to say on the top there, you were saying that desire, thought, and action corresponds to love, wisdom, and use.
Yes.
It seems like it could also correspond negatively.
To
not necessarily love, wisdom, and use. It could be hate, something.
Indeed. There could be a hellish image of...
But it's the same formula, it's just different.
Yes.
Okay.
So the basic thing is that everything that exists must be a substance in a form that acts. That's the basic. I mean, it's maybe it's obvious to you, but it wasn't obvious to lots of physicists. They like to do. Many physicists like to make things out of events, or they like to make things out of mathematical forms. You know, there's mathematical forms here. Some physicists like to just do pure mathematics, but then to make something existing, you have to have something, a causal aspect to it, a persisting causal aspect. And so, as I said, Swedenborg had, when he in the Principia, he had a very simple propensity, and he had motion of the points, but the points were just sort of like almost like mathematical points. They had no structure, and so he didn't know what substance these points were. But he was thinking, he was beginning to think along the lines, but it was only later that he knew more about substance. And so you never have actions by themselves, you never have forms by themselves, you never. A world of triangles or mathematical forms is not a physical world. I mean, Pythagoras thought that the world was made out of triangles. You know, Pythagorean theorem of squares on a triangle. He was very keen on triangles. But you can't make a world out of triangles because triangles are pure form and there's no substance. You know, where's the beef? There's got to be a substance that actually does things. And many, even many religious people think that religion is about thinking, about truth, or about form, and but this is just having this, but no substance, no desire, no love in it. And as human beings, we know we have to have love as well as, well, actually to be, we are loves. Each of us is a different love. This is Swedenborg's idea. So a persisting spiritual substance is the desire in the form, which is the thinking that it takes. And similarly, a persisting physical substance is a propensity. Now, okay, so any more questions about this? The topic, the title of today's lecture is Energy and Love, okay? And so we have love or desire here, and we have, actually I've called it propensity. And so we want to now discuss the difference between these two things. So far, I've explained what these are, and or outlined it, and I've outlined this structure, but I haven't explained the difference between those. And so I'm going to give a little bit more information about physics here. The propensities for the produced probability are actually produced by energy. So energy. Is this? I don't know if you remember what kinds of energy there are. What?
Electromagnetic.
Kinetic energy. That's from motion.
Potential
energy. Chemical energy. In fuel and food.
Gravitational
energy. So all of these energies are energies of some particular kind, aren't they? We say, so there's no, many philosophers and even some religious people want to talk about pure energy, but there isn't such thing as pure energy in the world. There's only energy of a particular kind. The energy of a pen moving along, or the electromagnetic field, or the air, or the gravity, and so modern physics explains how all of those energies are actually energies of particular objects. For gravity, for electromagnetic radiation, it's the photons that are exchanged, and for gravity, well, actually, we're not quite clear on gravity yet. That's one of the unsolved problems. But it's either to do with the space-time itself, or it's to do with gravitons that are exchanged. So there's no such thing as pure energy. There's always energy of a particular kind of substance. And so this agrees with Swedenborg's and Aristotle's idea that there are these substance in a form which acts. And similarly, there's no such thing as, like, I'm going to go on a limb here and say there's no such thing as pure love except loves for particular things. Mm. You see, a lot of religious people like the idea of pure love. They think, okay, there's two meanings to pure. One of them is that it's good and unadulterated and truthful and kind. This is the love which we attribute to God. We can call this pure love. But there's another kind of meaning of the word pure, which means that it's love that hasn't been... It's not a love of anything in particular. It's just a very sort of general love waiting to be used. But there isn't any such love as that. Even God's love is the love of particular things like humans and doing things and delights. So it's love. You can't just have this column. See, many people, you can see that some people like this, some people like that, some people like that. Some New Age ideas say everything is love and you don't have to think or believe anything. But that's just taking this first column as the only thing which exists, and love is never in a particular form wanting anything in particular. So I think Swedenborg and Aristotle remind us that we need all three, this triad, this as we've heard many times in this camp, everything is in threes. It's very important to remember that. So there's substance, and the substance is the love or the propensity, the motivating factor that keeps everything moving. There's the thought or the form that it takes when it's preparing to act. And then there's the actual selection or action. And then you have to explain what happens after you act. The desire, these actions select what can happen in the future. And in the physical world, it's a little bit more complicated because they're at the very most... These actual effects are the ultimate, the containant, the end of the line, the bottom line of the world is these actual effects. And this is the degree just before we have these actual effects. But the world is a little bit more complicated than that because there are actually multiple degrees which I'll come to. And so I'm going to remind you here that these propensities are produced by energies, and then the propensities produce the effects. So, and as we said, there are multiple kinds of energies, kinetic and potential energy.
Quick question.
Yes?
So in your system, do you have God as the... I know from reading your book that you start with the postulate that God is eternal.
Yes.
So do you... would you say that God is the... driving force and creating these?
Yes.
This system?
Yes. Okay. I'm just describing... When we get into it, we realize that our desire is not simple. Our desire consists of the substances which we are, which receive further desires from the Lord. Mm-hmm.
So if somebody was doing plugging negative values into there, would that be because they were turning away from God?
Yes. Or using later desires not being managed by earlier good desires, sort of like your child gets away from you, which, as we know, does happen. Okay, so this is a summary of what I was hoping to have got to on Monday. Okay, so now I want to come back to the topic of today's... I'll put this to one side because we'll refer to it from... Today's topic is about energy, love and energy. And I want to, now we're going to, I'm going to ask you, what's the similarities and differences between love and energy? I'm going to ask for some words. Energy is warm. Can they both be warm?
Yeah.
Can you?
Movement.
They.
Moving.
Yes, they produce movement, don't they? They're not. Okay, kinetic energy is the energy of a moving object, but in general, so there's kinetic energy plus other and. Yeah, there's two kinds of energy. There's kinetic energy, which is the energy of movement, and there's potential energy, which is energy that can produce movement. There's two kinds, kinetic energy and potential. But is love movement?
No.
Not directly, is it?
Yeah.
So we'll leave it. Some people want to say that love and energy are the same thing. How do they see love and energy if they want to do that? What are they claiming about love and energy?
That they're identical.
That, okay, so let's have a little box here and say equal question mark. Okay? But what are some similarities? Well, we want to work out at the end of today whether love is equal to energy and how they're related. So what's other features of love or feature of energy that we should note?
Positive.
Which is positive?
Love.
Love is positive.
Well, it's empowering.
Sorry?
Yeah,
both of them are empowering, aren't they?
Motivating.
Powering. Motivating. Yeah, and equal to that over here. That's an equal sign. Yes?
Well, like energy, love can be in potential.
Yes.
That's love alone.
Mm-hmm.
The Lord above the heavens, unknowable, is kind of love alone. Nothing happening there that
yes.
we see. But then it also, once it moves out, love in action,
yeah.
becomes kinetic love. And that's when love takes on a form. And that becomes the existere of creation.
Yes.
So it's same as energy. You have potential and you
yes.
have kinetic.
So you're saying that God doesn't have a form?
We don't know about God. Like I say, in essence, we know very little, only that we're told that God is, in essence, pure love.
Mm-hmm.
But until that pure love moves, we don't know about it, and nothing is happening on our side of
yes.
the equation.
Do the rest of you think...
I think that what you're looking for love is sort of a definition of what love is that's different from energy.
Well, I want to know the similarities and the differences.
Okay. So, well, one thing about love is that it is benign.
Positive. Positive.
It's positive.
Yes.
It's benign. And its basis is goodness.
So it's based on.
It's based on goodness.
On good.
And pure benign is like pure goodness from God's point of view.
From God's point of view. Although I'm going to ask the guy, what's your name in the green shirt?
Ken.
Ken, do you think love is always benign?
No, I was just going to say they both can have negative effects.
Yeah.
So.
Well, in the human world, yes.
Yes. And
but I think in...
Well, and the spiritual world, actually.
But I'm just saying that there's a love of God. The God is love
yes.
itself is different than
okay.
How love filters down and is...
Or...
I think it's too much of either one. Isn't it?
Okay, I'm going to say it's based on good or the opposite. Okay, if we allow evil spirits to be love, which they are, they're love of something else. So, and what about energy? Is energy based on what's good or not?
Yes. No, it can be destructive.
So energy is neutral, isn't it? It's neutral, can be used for good or evil. And in itself, potential energy, the energy of a chalk dropping, can be used for good or could be used for evil.
Well, so can love. I mean, people use love
yes.
for good all the time.
That's true. But good, when love is acting, it always has in mind what it...
I think it's more what we do, our effect.
Love is always trying to aim to what it thinks is good. That's my summary, which includes good love and evil love. Yes. So, what about thinking and reasons? What's the relation between love and reason and energy and reason and understanding of truth?
Enlightenment and light.
Yeah. So love is what? this, if we have love, does it love use reasons to act?
No.
Doesn't?
Yes.
Yes. So do we get an agreement on that? Who uses reasons to act from love?
I think
God and us.
And us.
Right. But that's getting into the thinking part. It
yes.
Did you ask what was thinking?
No, I'm just focusing on actually this first column. I'm trying to work out the difference between these, this propensity comes from energy and desire comes from love. I'm trying to work out the difference between this level and this level.
Okay. I think within love there is also wisdom, which
yes.
includes the degree of whatever.
Yes. So Swedenborg, I think, makes it clear that love uses wisdom or thought to act. Okay?
Wisdom rationalizes love. Love is not rational. Love is.
Do you think
love is just there, and you don't need any thinking to understand it or feel it?
But okay, but your love might not need thinking, but it if you don't give it thoughts to use, it has its own ideas about what's good. It charges off in some direction because it thinks, "Oh, that looked good," without thinking. It's sort of short-sighted. It doesn't take the long view into account if you don't associate it with.
So you apply your wisdom to tell them, "Don't go over there."
Exactly. So, but love always uses some kind of thinking. It's always, because this is what I said earlier. You can't have pure love. Love always has to be in a form. It has to be associated with some kind of thinking, even if it's primitive. Like a cow, you know, we use a cow as a metaphor for affections, but a cow still thinks, it still smells and follows its nose and whatever. Okay. So love uses wisdom and thought, but energy does not. It follows blindly. And another thing that I'll mention it now because I'm going to discuss it again tomorrow is about consciousness. Which of these are conscious? Love is conscious. And energy, is energy conscious? No, it's not conscious. Okay, and I'm going to check my list of things here, make sure we're covering them all here. Conscious? Yes.
I don't understand why when I look at the river,
yes,
and I don't say, oh, that is beautiful. My reason says it's beautiful. I am connected to the river and see the whole ecology of what's I'm part of.
Yes.
It's not a,
so you're
looking at blindly.
No, you are thinking.
No, I'm not.
But the thought of a whole river that love must use is a thought. Love might not be have a detailed theory of everything of ecology. You know, it might just have a very simple thought. Like, you know, have you ever let, you know, a dog, you can give a dog a simple thought about it wants to follow you or it following a rabbit or something. You know, it follows a simple thought and without thinking a lot, but it does think a little bit.
Just to have that feeling about the river and knowing the ecology and the part of it takes a lot of thought and learning just to be able to have that.
Yes, so that's requires a lot of thought. But if you see a river, there's a very simple thought involved.
Do you need thought to accept love or to accept it in you?
It does help. You have to have some thought. I mean, this is why we teach our children about lots of things. We teach them how to think first so that then they can manage their loves. Okay, one more thing about language and symbols, okay? Thinking, consciousness and love. Love makes symbols. This is a little bit more complicated because it's actually more to do with thought. So I may leave it off now. And if you have something suppose you go to a strange planet and you see this something or other moving around, doing funny things, which you can imagine, and you don't know what it is. You don't know whether it's alive or dead or conscious or unconscious. But if it's just physical, how would you know whether it's using language or not? You know, because in language we have words which refer to things. But it requires consciousness in order to do that. But if in the physical energy, it can't, there's nothing in the nature of physical energy which can use symbols or words to refer to something else. So there's a difference here that between the mental side and the physical side. This is the basic difference between mental and physical things, is that I'm going to say here that thought uses symbols. Because I'm going to say that because love always needs some thought. And by symbols, I mean correspondences or language, and the energy has no symbols.
Can I pursue that one more time?
Yes.
Suppose that you woke up one morning and you were just aware that everything was okay, everything is connected in the world.
Mm.
You can't see what it is that's making it all feel that way, but you are absolutely sure.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a thought or is that just love?
It's a thought which is a form of love.
Well, that sounds dangerous to me because then it could be perverted.
Indeed. Quite often it is.
That's what I say. I really like the image of the river there, because the river on its own is just that pure energy flowing. It's our conscious thought that puts all that other stuff onto it.
Yeah,
the ecology of it, and
but
all the things that are connected to it. The river doesn't know.
The river doesn't know. The river is not conscious. And I push back a little bit on your use of pure energy, because it's not pure energy, it's energy in the form of a river.
Right.
So what I'm... Okay, so you see the differences between love and energy. Now... Why would some people want to say that love and energy are the same thing? What's the advantage of that? You must have heard some people say that.
Well, I've thought about that one. One basic way of understanding that is that in positivist or physicalist or deterministic science,
yes,
there are certain tools which are very, very useful for measuring and understanding,
yes,
the physical world. However, those tools are not designed to accommodate something other than physical energy and measurable,
yes,
effects. So that therefore, in order to use those tools, they sometimes knowingly, but other times it's somewhat unconscious, do what they call rule out.
Mm.
So they simply rule out,
exactly,
phenomena that are claimed to exist but that cannot be measured. And if it's claimed that they're doing it, then at least you know they're doing it. Sometimes they don't,
yes,
tell you.
So you're taking...
So the tool will rule out, the use of the tool will rule out something that the tool can't accommodate.
So you're considering the case of people who say that only this level exists and this doesn't exist. So there's no place in their system for love or desire, so they have to say it's some propensity or energy, some blind,
right,
unreasoning, non-symbol using, unconscious,
right,
energy, because that's the nearest they can get to love. So love is just sort of powers in the brain to
something
do things.
Else.
Something else.
It's all inside the natural system. It all,
yes,
starts with propensity, but propensity is inside to start with.
Propensity is what the natural system is made out of.
Right. That satisfies them.
Okay, so there are those people who want to say that love must be equal to energy. But there's another group of people who want to say that love must be equal to energy. Who are they?
Their cousins.
I'm going to give you a clue. What would happen if you didn't have this level? and you only had this one.
Spiritual people?
They think they're spiritual.
Religious.
So which religious people would say that love is equal to energy? Do you know any?
Swedenborg.
No. Well, no, I'm trying to say that Swedenborg has... That this level exists as well as that level, and they correspond to each other, and that the functions are similar, but although the substances are different. Okay. So what? Which religious people do you know of? Any? Maybe you must know some, Red Wing.
Back in the hippie day, that's what.
You're getting close. Warm. Sorry.
New Agers.
Sorry?
Deists?
No. What do you know what deism is?
Yeah.
Is those say that God created the world and left it to run by itself.
Right. But that drops it down into the natural.
Well, it doesn't necessarily. He could have created spiritual as well as physical, so it's not quite clear what deism means in practice. But there's, have you ever heard of, you know, sort of the New Age non-dualists?
Oh, yes.
I'm who's?
Non-dualist.
Do I remind you now? I remind you of those people that I was looking for. So what do these people say?
Basically, these people say they reduce reality to one substance.
Yes.
One single substance, and all is one.
And so that they want to combine these two levels to say that it's really just one.
They're just one level.
And furthermore, that it's just, many of them go further and say that all is love. Everything is one. And so why, and therefore energy, which is in the physical, is the same as love. So what's the advantage of doing that in their mind? How, can you put yourself in their mind and think why they would do that?
Kind of absolves everyone of blame.
Well, that's, yes, because energy here is not conscious, it follows blindly, it ignores what's good and evil, or good and not good. So if you combine love and energy, then love becomes like a blind energy which you can use for anything.
Right.
So, and they think they can be spiritual by following the impulses which they see in themselves, because that's all there is, without trying to distinguish between good and not good. Exactly. Was anyone like this in an earlier life? Does anyone stand up and represent those people?
I know that my sister is like that.
Okay.
When we have arguments about her spirituality and mine, she says, I believe in energy. So there's this energy, just like the force, you know, like in Star Wars. But there's a force and it's benign. And that drives all of
yes. You know, I'll come back to you in a sec, but you mentioned Star Wars. Okay, they don't use energy, they use force. The force.
Right.
And you can use it for good or evil. I mean, that's still true. You can use your love for good or evil, but the point is that there's no good or evil, because they just use it for whatever they want.
Right, exactly.
And it's like taking the privilege without the responsibility.
Allison?
I'm feeling a little uncomfortable with the way the conversation is going, and I want to be careful about they language. A lot of us are having a lot of different kinds of experiences in life. This may not feel to some of us to say love cannot be a certain way or energy cannot be a certain way I'm just speaking what I'm feeling right now, is that even to say God can or cannot be a certain way, I'm just feeling a little uncomfortable with the way that the conversation is going, and I just want to acknowledge that a lot of people have different experiences, and to say, like, those people, or they think that love
yes.
is energy, I want to be respectful of.
Okay, so I was trying to find someone who could speak to it from their own experience. Stu, do you want to say something?
No, I thought you were asking.
Okay.
Because we had a discussion.
Yes, we had a discussion. Okay.
What if Dean? Love, it, love being the love equaling energy is the form of looking around and seeing the connectedness of everything, that you suddenly feel really warm, not because there's energy, but because love is within every single thing, animating everything. I think I used the wrong word when I said ecology, because it's beyond ecology. I am one of those persons, and I will stand up and say that, and it feels good, so I'm going to do it. But it also is, I mean, that everything has that energy within it, and that energy is love.
Everything has energy in it, but I want to say that within energy is love. Okay, so there's a correspondence between love here and energy here. That, in other words, this love produces the energy. You have to use, if you want to bring energy and love together, you have to use a meaning for energy which is not just physical. Okay, because Swedenborg, so these are two discrete degrees that Swedenborg talks about.
It sounds like what you're saying is that love is more like a fuel.
Yes. Well, in the spiritual world, love, that's what love is. What you love doing motivates you and enables you to receive life.
It's a form of energy that produces all other energy.
But as I said, love is always love of something, but energy is love of, energy is the energy of particular things, but it's not motivated to do things in the future. Very far. It doesn't. It's blind. It just sort of does by touch. It just does what's next to it.
So it's like the ultimate potential energy.
Yes. It's. So what I'm trying to say is that I want us to, at least the people in this room, to distinguish in their mind between love and energy. There are similarities between love and energy, and in fact, they correspond to each other. Desire corresponds to propensity, and love produces desire, and energy produces propensity. So love and energy correspond to each other, but they're not equal. Now, some you may know other people who think that they're equal, but let's be at least clear in our own minds that, as you said, love is within and produces all of the energy of the natural world. That's, we can agree with that. But it doesn't mean that the energy of the natural world is love. Love produces the energy, and it enlivens the energy, and lives within the energy. Even you can say all of these things, but I think Swedenborg is clear that love and energy—one's spiritual, one's natural—they're two different, discrete degrees, and therefore they should be distinguished in your mind, even though they're causally connected.
And love is not our own.
Ah, that's another challenge. It appears to be our own to us at the time, but afterwards we realize that it's not.
Energy might be a little different in that
yes.
respect. I can do things to manipulate and possess energy. Love is not my own.
Yes. Okay. So I'm now going, okay, in a few minutes we'll have I've got 5 minutes left in this morning. So what I'm going to do is to explain what I'm going. I've been meaning to present the big picture today. Okay, so I'm going to. Oh, how does this work? Flip. Oh, is that to be kept? Please do not erase.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I'll take a photograph of it if you want.
Okay. Is it?
Yeah.
Do I have permission?
Let me take a photo.
Okay.
How many years?
I really need
it. There's an expiry time on do not erase. Okay, so I want to explain what I'm going to do in the second hour, and I'm going to lead up to it now so we can prepare ourselves, is to see all of the discrete degrees, because here I've hinted that there are other discrete degrees that produce this. But I want to give what I think as a diagram, and you can help me with this because it'll be fun writing in the blanks, a big diagram of all of the discrete degrees that Swedenborg talks about. Okay? Have you ever thought of that? Because quite often he talks about discrete degrees, the natural, the interior natural, the interior rational, the exterior rational, the interior, the internal, and the inmost, and you, it's easy to lose track.
You need a scorecard.
You need, and then he quite often he just neglects completely in his discussion the physical degree, as Gard and I realized yesterday, that or the day before. And so I want to in the second lecture, okay, you got the picture. Okay, so I'll just begin the framework, okay? So you can think about it in the break. So at the top, we have God, okay? Everything begins from God. And there are three degrees in God, which are?
Love, wisdom,
and?
Use.
Or what's, okay. Actually, the Eastern Orthodox has the best idea of what this third degree is. Do you know what the Eastern Orthodox is?
No.
No, it's proceeding energy. It's the Holy Spirit that spreads out. But let's just say, I'm going to say proceeding action. I mean, Swedenborg uses action, uses use, and so on. And then we're going to have some internal degrees, and this one here is going to be equal to a big box, which we're going to have fun at 10 o'clock filling in the gaps, okay? This is the inmost, which he doesn't talk about very much. The inmost is, I don't even know which of these is our, okay, let's, Swedenborg talks about two discrete degrees above the heavens, and he doesn't say what they are, but he also says that our inmosts, which are the constant things that make us individuals, are also close to God and above the heavens. So I'm going to put a, I'm not going to say much more about these because we don't know what they are. It's partly because we can't experience them, but we use them because they make us individuals. And so one of those question marks is the person, okay, individual. All this writing, it's so small so that you can't read what I've written because I don't know. So, and then, but after the break, we're going to fill in the gap, the big box on the right, and we'll see where all of these things fit in. Which, I've never seen a Swedenborgian person do this in the past, and so I want to see what you think of it. And in particular, I'm relying on you to tell me if anything's missing. Okay, because this is what, I'm going to say what I think the full structure is, but you've all been reading Swedenborg, and you can think whether I'm missing anything. That's very important, because if I'm missing something, I need to know. Okay, thank you.